Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The HomeWorks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob Sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Ever start a new supplement and wonder, is this really working? You're not alone. Most supplements aren't easily absorbed, which means your body might not be getting the nutrients it needs. Symbiotica takes a different approach, with formulas designed for maximum absorption. Favorites, like their liposomal vitamin C, support a strong immune system and boost natural collagen production. And their newest standout, liquid colostrum, is essential for a healthy gut, packed with nutrients that soothe and restore the gut lining. Symbiotica's clean, bioavailable supplements help your body actually use what you take, delivering real results. And with a monthly subscription, it's easy to stay consistent. Symbiotica makes wellness simple. Ready to feel the difference? Go to Symbiotica.com and use code START for 20% off. That's Symbiotica.com, code START.
It's the middle of a September night at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. In a patch of grass just outside a building on campus, two students are preparing to record a video. Both of them are wearing t-shirts, soaked in a strong-smelling liquid. Once the camera starts rolling, the young men light their shirts on fire. Within seconds, each is a pillar of flame.
Get it off!
One manages to get his shirt off quickly, leaving it burning in the grass. The other struggles, begging for help before managing to get his shirt off. It turns out this wasn't their first attempt at lighting themselves on fire that night, nor was it the first extreme or dangerous thing they'd done that month. They'd been waterboarded, dragged behind the back of a car in a trash can, hit with golf balls. They were weather pledges, part of an alleged Kappa Sigma fraternity pledging ritual. Later that night, both students were taken to a local hospital before being transferred to a specialized burn unit in Nashville. Both were severely burned, one requiring extensive skin grafts. The year-long legal case and investigation that followed raised questions about fraternity hazing, and whether public officials went out of their way to protect the fraternity and to protect the institution of hazing. I'm Ian Mont. This week on Campus Files, weather pledges, corruption and hazing at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga.
My name's Ed Buckman. I'm a sergeant over investigations at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. I've been in law enforcement since 2011.
Sergeant Buckman has been at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, or UTC, for a little under 2 years now. Sergeant Buckman first contacted us last summer, nearly a year ago. He and I initially spoke last August, after I had finished some reporting on hazing for the first season of Campus Files. He was in the middle of an investigation of his own that had run far longer and involved far more than he expected. It took a while before he was able to talk on the record. The case actually began less than a month into his new job.
In my ignorance, I guess, it was like sleepy little campus. And so when I got there, I'm like, I'm a Christian and I'm like, Lord, just give me a little bit of relaxing time. Just let me get my feet back. Just kind of relax a little bit. And he had other plans. So my first week did like all the organizational stuff, pistol qual, got some gear, got a laptop. The second week I was in a crime scene evidence procedure class. It was a full 40 hours. And so, yes, Wednesday of week three is when the incident happened.
Can you describe basically what the incident was?
So, and it's funny, I was just recounting this the other day. A midnight sergeant had come in. And I get there early. We work 10-hour shifts. And so I get there at 6, and it was probably 6:30. A midnight shift officer came in and showed me a video of two students catching themselves on fire. And because I'm kind of a knucklehead, I just laughed and like, well, you know, that's a stupid thing to do.
But later that morning, when the deputy chief arrives, he suggests that this could be hazing. It was the middle of rush week, after all. And the distinction is crucial because it's one thing for two college kids to do something dumb and dangerous, but it's an entirely different situation if they were forced to.
And so we end up going to our EOC and we pull up on big screens. Like it's like a conference room and there's big screens and we got 750 different security cameras. And so we pull up the incident where it happened. And right away, there's two other witnesses there. And as the video plays, you see the two victims doing some hand salutes.
After doing these hand salutes, the figures on screen attempt to light their bare chests on fire, but it doesn't catch. Eventually, they give up and put shirts on after soaking the shirts in rubbing alcohol. This time, it catches. You heard what happens next back at the beginning of the episode.
And so then after seeing the choreographed movements and whatnot, we're like, okay, this is some sort of hazing.
Sergeant Buckman begins by contacting the two witnesses who recorded the video, thinking they must be the ones directing the hazing. But he quickly learned there was no connection. They were just nearby and happened to agree to record a video when asked.
And they're the ones that introduced the weather pledge. They said it's a big thing on TikTok. It's a term apparently was trending at that time, that weather pledges are made to do certain things, give the actual weather, and then do something silly or stupid. And then they send that video to the fraternity brothers.
There was no indication that it was a tradition within this particular fraternity chapter. But if you search the term weather pledge on TikTok, you'll find videos of what Sergeant Buckman is describing. Here's one where two pledges scream the current weather at each other from across a busy but quiet campus library.
I don't know if there's any practicality of getting weather from two 18-year-olds, but yeah.
So it appears at first that this mini trend was the inspiration for these alleged hazing activities. And the fact that this trend involved a daily weather report also implied that there might be more than one video like this. So the next step was to go to the hospital in Nashville to interview the two victims and ideally gain access to their phones. But before doing so, he wanted to arrange a search warrant so he could ensure access if they didn't hand over their phones willingly. But the injured pledges were in Nashville recovering, in an entirely different county from campus. So Sergeant Buckman needed to make sure that the warrant is enforceable in Nashville, even if it's issued elsewhere. So he calls the local assistant district attorney for advice.
And so I called him and I gave him what we had at that time was, hey, two students, Kappa Sig pledges. We strongly believe that this is a hazing incident. At the end of my minute and 30 story of what was going on, he said, Ed, I've got to recuse myself. I'm Kappa Sig alumni. I said, okay. You know, I kind of shrugged.
Ultimately, that is the right thing to do if there's a conflict of interest. So Sergeant Buckman calls a local judge with the same question.
And so I felt comfortable. Hey, text him. Hey, do you got a second? And then give him a call. Gave him about the same spiel. And at the end of that conversation, he said, hey, Ed, I got to recuse myself. I'm Kappa Sig alumni. And I really, like, I got off the phone and I laughed. I'm like, is anybody down? I just have this question.
Eventually, Sergeant Buckman is able to get a warrant he can enforce. So he and a colleague head up to Nashville.
At the hospital, having conversations with one of the victims, he was the one that was far less burned. He had said that they'd previously done another weather pledge where they squirted lemon juice in their eyes and then they ended up getting slapped. It was lemon juice, flour, and then got slapped. He said that they created these ideas, that the fraternity brothers didn't push him into this. The other victim that was more severely burned, his face was covered in gauze. His upper body, arms were just covered in gauze. It didn't seem like he was doing very well. He had gone into the ICU, I believe, and much more reserved on what he was willing to talk to us about.
But Sergeant Buckman did get them to hand over their phones. The next morning, he returned to campus to review the data they had collected.
A lot of the phones had been deleted. They had been cleaned. Photos, deleted photos had been cleaned. And for like an 18-year-old, having just a couple hundred photos.
The contents of the phone were basically a bust. But Sergeant Buckman was still planning to interview the fraternity pledge master and president. The investigation was far from over. But in the background, while he's arranging these interviews, a number of legally and ethically dubious back-channel conversations were taking place, all triggered by those two brief phone calls to Assistant DA Loper and Judge Patterson.
I had no other thoughts about the two that had recused themselves for weeks. I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was just a happenstance. I could never have imagined that there would be anything to those two phone calls.
Hey, parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
By the end of 2024, Sergeant Buckman has already spoken to the two victims recovering at the burn unit in Nashville. And now, he's looking to speak with a pledge master and the frat president.
I initially called him and the president. And really, like, during an investigation, when somebody lies to me and I know that they're lying to me, it really draws a motivation out in me to, like, figure out what this is. And they both blatantly said, hey, we don't haze. We've never even heard of the weather pledge activity. And really, the pledge master had like a script that he was reading from. And he said it three or four times. I'm the pledge educator. He corrected me on that. I'm the pledge educator. I help the new individuals get acclimated to the fraternity and campus life. And I'm a mentor. And then he said it again and again and again. And I was like, clearly this individual is lying to me. I want to talk to him face to face.
So Sergeant Buckman arranged for an in-person interview a few days later.
At some point early on in the interview, the conversation, he said, can I make a phone call? And so I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And he excused himself. He was out there for a couple minutes. And when he walked back in, he had his phone in his hand, like showing me it with some level of uncertainty, like inquisitive, like questioning. I said, is there somebody on there? He's like, no, they're going to call me. I said, who's going to call you? And he's like, something to the effect of, I think it's a lawyer. Is it your lawyer? And kind of this back and forth of, he didn't know who was going to call him. And so the phone finally rings, and the individual on the other line is a local defense lawyer.
Sergeant Buckman continues with the interview while the attorney is on the line. But after they wrap up, he asks the pledge master a question.
And I said, who gave you that lawyer's information? And he started getting a little bit antsy and whatnot and didn't want to talk.
A short time later, Sergeant Buckman gets a call from the father of the pledge master. The father is upset about his son being questioned, but he's confused when Sergeant Buckman mentions the attorney.
And I said, I want to know who gave your son the lawyer's number. He settled down. He goes, that's not my son's lawyer. He doesn't have a lawyer yet. And I said, your son just spoke to a lawyer twice on the phone. And about another 30 minutes later, he called me back.
The pledge master's father said that his son got the attorney's info from a local judge. The same judge who was also a frat alumni and had already recused himself from the case.
That's when my eyes kind of popped open to, this is very, very odd.
And why, for somebody who doesn't work in law enforcement or isn't an attorney or you know, familiar with these processes, why is that unusual or concerning?
From when a lawyer or a judge would recuse himself, or a law enforcement officer, have to step out of an investigation because of personal conflict, from that point forward, it would be essential that they have no further involvement in it. That this is a criminal investigation, and a state judge who has recused himself of the ongoings of the case intentionally reached out to a potential suspect and then gave him at least a phone number for and contact of a lawyer.
When Sergeant Buckman reviews the contents of the pledge master's phone, he finds proof to back that up.
After I dumped the pledge master's phone, and there's one text message to the pledge master with the contact. So it's an inbound, a received text message with the lawyer's information.
There was the proof. The judge's personal cell phone number had sent the attorney's contact info to the pledge master. And while looking through the phone, Sergeant Buckman also uncovered a trove of other valuable information about the alleged hazing.
We'd seen the videos, and those videos were being pulled behind a truck and a trash can going at a high rate of speed. The two boys were in a trash can. We saw them getting shot in the back with either Orbeez or airsoft guns. We saw waterboarding, essentially, that they laid back with towels over their face.
There's more videos of the hazing than we really have time to get into, but the videos range from painful, like laying down on a bed of mousetraps, to outright torture, being waterboarded in a bathtub.
What was your reaction seeing these? I mean, the waterboarding one is like, that's literally torture.
The 6 or 8 videos are all of them being weather pledges. And so while some of them were like silly, the waterboarding was the one that kind of tipped the scale, that like these fraternity brothers are receiving these videos, whether they're requesting them or they're just receiving them in the process, they never told them to stop. And then the last video was obviously them catching themselves on fire. In the video, you can see the shirts burn themselves off of the students. But if it were like synthetic, like the poly, whatever it is, it likely would have vacuum sealed and they would have died.
To quickly explain what he's saying, by sheer luck, the students chose to wear cotton t-shirts when they lit themselves on fire. Cotton burns. If they had instead worn a polyester shirt, the fabric wouldn't have burned. It would have melted and fused to their skin. The pledge master seemed not to appreciate the gravity of the situation in interviews, but the president did.
What really struck me, he told me that he wanted to become the president to help affect positive change. He was a pledge as a sophomore. And so this was about 24 months gap from when he was a pledge to when he was the president, short time frame. And he said it was really bad when he was a pledge and he wanted to change that. And 3 different times I said, well, tell me about what it was like when you were a pledge. And he became visibly like in distress. But what I saw was very raw, an incident that happened. And I would put it in the category of like traumatic.
The president told Sergeant Buckman that he'd tried to remove himself as president 3 or 4 times already, and that he wanted nothing to do with the fraternity anymore. And based on how emotional the president's reaction was, Sergeant Buckman believed he was being truthful in a way that the pledge master simply wasn't. And there was another piece of that conversation that stuck with Sergeant Buckman. He was reminded of the patterns of violence he'd encountered in past police work, patterns of domestic violence. Typically, people who grow up in a violent home are more likely to replicate that violence as adults, but they have the advantage of many years of life to break that cycle.
What I realized interviewing that president when he said that 24 months earlier that he was a pledge himself being abused, that cycle is so short. 24 months is like they're literally just echoing what was just done to them. And so to have any kind of successful change, and I believe the president was trying to push for some kind of organizational change, but it was too quick. And there you have individuals that are seniors, juniors, sophomores, that they're perpetuating this even outside the hands of the president.
And what often happens in cases of alleged hazing like this is that alumni act to protect the organization from consequences of this cycle of violence, often at the expense of victims. And it seems that could be happening here too. Remember, you've got 2 frat alumni who'd recused themselves from the case after being briefed by Sergeant Buckman, the judge and the assistant DA. Sergeant Buckman already knew that the judge had shared the information of an attorney with the pledge master after recusing himself. And now Sergeant Buckman learned that the assistant DA may have passed along inside information about the investigation to others after recusing himself. And now some of that information appears to have made it back to the frat.
Of course, you don't know, I'm sure, what exactly that information would have been, but I assume that would have been, hey, this is what the police know, this is what they're looking into.
Yes. And I don't know what other information, because I continued conversations with other individuals at the DA's office during this time frame.
Meaning he doesn't know what other information could have made its way through the assistant DA to the fraternity. And sometime later, Sergeant Buckman's boss calls the local DA to update her on the case. Now, the titles are a little bit confusing, but the DA is the supervisor of the assistant DA. It's the assistant DA that Sergeant Buckman thought was sharing inside information. And it's the DA who would bring criminal charges for hazing based on the police case. So it's essential she has accurate info.
Our chief calls the district attorney and says, hey, I just wanted to give you an update about the hazing thing.
Sergeant Buckman's chief gave a brief update saying that they believe this was a case of hazing associated with the Kappa Sig fraternity. And after giving this update, the DA responds by saying,
I was told that this is nothing, that there was no connection to the fraternity, something to that effect.
Allegedly, the assistant DA told his boss, the DA, that the frat he was an alum of was not involved in any hazing.
We found this out down the road that he not only did he recuse himself, but then went and intentionally told the district attorney falsities.
At this point, Sergeant Buckman went to his department chief to ask for guidance.
So he recommends that we bring in a federal partner because, like in other states, they have like an attorney general that we could utilize on a state level. But we speculated at this point that at least 2 individuals from the Hamilton County court system had been compromised. We have the number 2 in charge of the district attorney's office, and we have a state court judge. We couldn't lean on them at this point in time.
So Sergeant Buckman got in touch with a federal law enforcement agency.
And they're very gracious and really did a lot of work with us and for us, and began examining what statutes they have, what kind of federal statutes they have, and looking what we had on the surface.
Now, Sergeant Buckman is investigating a complex case of alleged hazing. But on top of that, he's also gained the support of a federal agency to help investigate possible public corruption. It seemed at this point like the dam may finally be breaking. But Sergeant Buckman would soon learn it was not nearly that simple.
June is here, which means it's finally time to reach for your summer wardrobe. And if you're trying to look good without overheating, Quince is your best bet. Their summer collection has all the warm weather staples: breathable linen, washable silk, and soft organic cotton. I now own their 100% linen pants in more colors than I'd like to admit. And the best part is that you get all that quality without the luxury markup. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a destination for elevated essentials across the home, from kitchen to bedding, making it easy to bring a more premium feel into everyday life. Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/campus for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/campus for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/campus.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at grunes.co.
We started out with the fraternity members and then really focused on the pledges, but very quickly they started echoing the same story.
For months, Sergeant Buckman had been working on a case of alleged hazing at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. But it seems like everyone involved is reading from the same script at this point. They would all say things like, "Oh, I was out of town when this happened," or "I'm not really plugged in." The only people who would talk were people who had dropped out of the fraternity for one reason or another.
They gave us a little bit more about the other aspects of hazing, being in a dark room with blindfolds on, getting beer poured all over them or some kind of liquid poured all over them, a bunch of the favors, running a forced mile run for punishment, things like that.
The lack of a figurative smoking gun to prove hazing was one issue, but there was an even bigger challenge.
But what it made it very difficult, law enforcement-wise, criminal prosecution-wise, was that the two victims did not wish to prosecute.
See, Tennessee doesn't actually have a state anti-hazing law that would allow Sergeant Buckman to prosecute or punish anyone for what happened here. Certainly not without the support of the victims. So unless something changed, a hazing case was all but dead in the water. And that left the question of public corruption. Sergeant Buckman had been working with a federal partner, and eventually arranged a meeting with the local U.S. attorney. If you're not familiar, each local state and county has their own district attorney responsible for handling state and local cases. But there's also a U.S. attorney who serves a similar role but on federal cases. So Sergeant Buckman met with them to discuss the case.
There are certain tools that the federal partners can provide kind of behind the scenes, getting phone tolls like, what we were speculating at this point in time was cross-communication from the judge, the DA, and we wanted to see that. So we have individual messages, but we wanted to see how much were they communicating with each other. And so there's certain legal processes that the feds can do that we can't do. And so that's really what we wanted. They seem very eager in the meeting to say, yeah, let's look into this.
A few hours after the meeting, Sergeant Buckman gets a message saying the feds can't open a case right now. And the reason is pretty simple. They would need a DA to bring criminal charges. But in this case, the DA could end up charging her own staff, which is an obvious conflict of interest. So for the investigation to go ahead, they'd need her to agree to step aside, to recuse herself, and to bring in a temporary replacement. So they arrange a meeting with the DA and the U.S. Attorney's Office.
So we all sit down at the U.S. Federal Prosecutor's Office, and we run through the case. Hey, this is what we got from the hazing. This is the implication of the judge. You're number two. She appeared to be livid and immediately recused herself.
From Sergeant Buckman's perspective, the DA was livid at the alleged conduct of her assistant DA and agreed to step aside. So just to recap, this incident of two kids lighting themselves on fire had launched two separate investigations, one into possible fraternity hazing, and another into possible inside interference into the hazing investigation. And they just got a major win in the second case. The DA had agreed to bring in a replacement so they could explore charges against her own staff. but that replacement would be responsible for bringing charges from either case. So they set up a meeting to brief the replacement on the investigation.
And I start running through my case presentation and talk about the hazing is what we got with it. They're not wishing to prosecute at this time. And then we get to the judge, and I said essentially that he sent a text message and is conversing with one of our suspects. She stops me in front of my chief, the federal partners. She stops me, interrupts me, and says, "He's my friend. He wouldn't do that."
The replacement DA that's responsible for fairly investigating and bringing charges had just said she didn't believe Sergeant Buckman because she knew the judge personally.
It was so blatant. And as I continue with my case, I'm like, she just said that she is essentially implicated and should have immediately recused herself. But not only did she not recuse herself, she made a very definitive statement that this potential suspect would not do that because he's my friend. And like I was saying, I was dumbfounded.
Without the support of the replacement DA, there was basically nothing left to do. They did continue to investigate the hazing and possible public misconduct, but couldn't gather enough evidence to press charges. But there were other options, particularly when it came to the assistant DA, who allegedly shared inside information. Here is Sergeant Buckman recounting a portion of that first meeting with the replacement DA.
She lets us know that there is a formal process for lawyers at the state level of ethics violations. And she was actually compelled when she found out that there was an ethical violation or a potential one, she was compelled to report that. To my knowledge, she never did.
Back on campus, the possibility of a criminal case over hazing was basically dead in the water. And this was a source of frustration for Sergeant Buckman.
Even though those victims did not wish to prosecute, they wouldn't have done these things absent the fraternity.
As Sergeant Buckman sees it, whether the frat brothers directed the pledges to put themselves in harm's way or not, the students would not have ended up in the hospital if it weren't for the frat. And now, all that was left was for student conduct to handle the case.
The fraternity at the center of a hazing investigation at UTC is no longer active.
That fraternity was temporarily barred from campus and ordered to cease operations. However, it appears that at least for some time, they continued to host parties, chapter meetings, and even collect dues from members after the suspension. As for the individual students, according to Sergeant Buckman, no students have faced any sanctions or punishment. Last year, in addition to suspending this particular fraternity, all Greek life at UTC was temporarily suspended as members were required to attend mandatory safety training.
UTC's Greek life community filled McKenzie Arena tonight for a mandatory student safety training. That's after an investigation found instances of hazing on campus, including video of pledges lighting themselves on fire.
By now, Greek life is more or less fully operational at UTC, with the exception of this Kappa Sigma chapter. As for the public officials involved, like the judge and the assistant DA, none have been formally charged with misconduct or found to have officially violated any laws or guidelines. Sergeant Buckman did have the chance to interview the judge directly about his actions, specifically his decision to recommend an attorney for the pledge master after recusing himself.
His statement was, "These kids were so scared. I was just trying to help these kids. If this 18-year-old was another kid outside of the fraternity, I don't believe that he would have taken so many steps in a criminal investigation. I think that he would have valued his career and his ethics above that. I think that some of these individuals, some of their identity was crafted. Some of their, especially going from childhood to adulthood, was crafted in that fraternity, and it means a lot to them."
Before working in law enforcement, Sergeant Buckman was also in the military. And this experience reminded him a bit of that time in his life.
Military and law enforcement, they source younger, specifically younger males, and the motivation to belong is very high for someone to go through basic training or boot camp or even an academy. And that's what I started correlating it with, is like the fraternity is essentially leveraging that want to belong, and individuals are willing to do a lot for that belonging, for that group, that tribe to fit in, to belong.
More than anything, this case made clear to Sergeant Buckman that the drive to belong can lead people to do all sorts of things they would never otherwise do.
The thing that was commonly stated throughout this investigation is UTC is not even that bad. the other bigger universities that these kids have been to and have seen are way worse. And that's scary.
If you've got a story idea, we would love to hear about it. Send us an email at campusfilespod@gmail.com. And if you're loving this podcast, be sure to click follow on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us a review and a 5-star rating. Campus Files is an Odyssey original podcast hosted by Margot Gray and Ian Mont. Our executive producers are Leah Reese-Dennis and Lloyd Lockridge. Campus Files is produced by Ian Mont and Margot Gray. Sound design and engineering by Andy Jaskowitz and Zach Clark. Legal support by Laura Berman and Melissa Jean. Original music by Davey Sumner. Special thanks to Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Hilary Schuff, Eric Donnelly, Kate Hutchison-Rose, Sean Cherry, Kurt Courtney, and Lauren Vieira.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.
Hey, it's Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money, the show from Slate about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. Many of us have something going on behind closed doors, like a listener we called Elizabeth, who told us she's a hoarder.
I see mess beyond probably what most people think of when they think of mess.
We'll work through it all together on Death, Sex, and Money. Listen wherever you get podcasts.